I'm probably not going to use them. Tim Gates. No, he's with QSI.
Okay, it's now 2:45, and we're going to reconvene the hearing in docket TC07-117. Mr. Gerdes, you were conducting your cross-examination of Mr. Singer, and please proceed.
Mr. Singer, you talked about talking with the QSI people and pointing out some corrections that needed to be made in this second cost study that was put together by QSI. And I'm looking at Mr. Fisher's testimony on page 15, where he says the one issue raised by staff during the April 2007 meeting was the percentage of cable and wire plant investment attributable to regulated telecommunication service. Would that be your recollection of what that was?
Mr. Gerdes, if I can ask, are you talking about, did you say the study that's an exhibit or the cost study from before?
That's the exhibit, the second cost study.
Could you direct me to page and line number, please?
Page 15. Line 265, he's doing them consecutively.
Yes, that change in the cable and wire facilities, or i.e. the local loop adjustment, was what I was referring to, and that was one of the things that brought the rate from the 19 to the 9.
Right, and when that adjustment was made, it went from the 19 to the 9, correct?
That's my understanding, yes.
Okay. But earlier in your testimony, you had talked about making a criticism, I think was the term you used, of that cost study in a meeting with QSI in April. And I'm asking you if this is what you were talking about.
Yes, that is correct.
Yeah. All right. Thank you. That concludes my cross-examination.
Thank you. Commissioners, do you have questions of the witness?
Yes. Mr. Singer, in the 96 Act, there was a lot of talk about that. Was competition the biggest thing of the 96 Act, or was the fair marketplace part of that?
I think both of those issues were a big driving force behind the 96 Act.
Would you rate one of them higher than the other, or do you think that they're equal members of the 96 Act? Would you rate a fair marketplace higher than increased competition? Or do you think that one should create the other on an equal plane?
If I had to rate one over the other, I would probably say that the fair marketplace is probably more essential to the act in my mind.
That's it.
Mr. Singer, in Mr. Gertz's examination of you, there was some discussion about efficient marketplaces and how that might play out in a grocery store. Do you remember that?
Yes, I do.
If we were going to use that grocery store analogy, and again, presuming that it was an efficient marketplace with, you know, sufficient discipline, in some instances for some products, it would be possible that that grocery store may be forced to sell some products at below acquisition prices. Is that right?
That is correct.
Okay. I'm looking at your testimony on page 4. And on lines 3 and 4, you note that 22 of the 29 CLECs are currently mirroring or are lower than Quest. And I think we've come up with a 79% number that we've been quoting about a little bit today. Does that sound about right?
That sounds correct.
Part of me wonders if that number isn't a bit misleading because some of those companies don't do much business in South Dakota. Could you give me an idea of, I mean, do we have any idea what the line count or market share might be for those 79%?
If you give me one moment to dig for some information. I understand the question that you're getting at, and it's a very tough question to answer. So I'm going to try and answer it in a method, because I think we're looking at relative proportions here, because clearly if you say 79%, if half of them were providing service to one customer and the other half of them were providing services to 100,000 customers, truly the 79% would be misleading. However, having stated that, according to Mid-Continent Communications' last annual report, they reported that they were serving 96,000 local customers. they make up a huge majority of that 79%. The next largest CLEC, and we're talking CLECs here, the next largest CLEC that I have here, I got to wait 1 minute here, I've got to read this to make sure I'm not going to unveil any confidential information. The next largest CLEC is Knowledge of the Black Hills at approximately just a little over 30,000. Followed by that is Knowledge of the Plains by just a little over 15,000.
I'm sorry, what was that?
Knowledge of the Plains is a little over 15,000. And then it continues to drop off dramatically there. Where Northern Valley has just a little over 5,000 and SANCOM has just a little over 2,000. So, you know, if we were to put a relative relationship in there, certainly Midco being the largest and being one who is charging Quest, I think we may find that that 79% may actually increase somewhat. For the it's hard to say, you know, if you put a relative, if you weight it by customers, what that 79% is going to do, but I don't believe it's going to move by a large amount because a few of the largest customers are charging the Quest rates.
Mr. Singer, you're in your time working with the commission, you become familiar with Rule 2010-2712, and the title of that is Determination of Switched Access Rates for a Company Granted an Exemption from Developing Company-Specific Cost-Based Switched Access Rates.
I'm sorry.
Yeah, and I went fast because I figured you already knew it. So I'll Determination of Switched Access Rates for a Company Granted an Exemption from Developing Company-Specific Cost-Based Switched Access Rates. Are you familiar with that rule?
Was that Rule 12?
Yes, right.
Very familiar.
Let's see, you know what that rule says, and I know what that rule says. That rule doesn't seem to jive very well with your recommendation to this commission. Can you help me understand how we get from here to there?
If I may borrow John's rules or Karen's rules. And I wish I'd have brought my rules because they're marked a little more. The whole essence of the problem that you're facing and that staff is facing and that you ask right now is relates to the fact that does 2010-2712 apply or does it not apply to CLECs? Staff, again, has taken the position over the years that it probably doesn't apply. Now that does not apply to CLECs. Now that may not be the appropriate legal opinion. That has never been litigated before this commission. We don't have any attorney general opinions or anything. It's never been litigated. But staff takes that position because clearly if a rule was implemented before the CLECs were even fathomed in the 96 Act, it leads to beg the question, how could it apply? Now, clearly the rule refers to LECs. Now, does it or does it not apply to CLECs? I think we all agree it certainly applies to ILECs, but the question remains. So then, if it does apply, can the commission waive that rule on its own motion? And I believe that there are other rules within here. I would have to look closer, but I believe the commission has the ability to waive its own rules, and I think the way it reads, it's on its own motion. And I believe it's if the commission finds it's in the public interest or various things like that. I can look for that, spend some time looking for that if you would like, but I believe it is within 2010-27, the chapter 2010-27 within there about waiving its own rules upon the commission's own motion. Yes, if you look at 2010-27-12, and I'm going to read it out of context, I'm going to read the last sentence of there. For good cause, the commission may, on its own motion, or by application from a carrier's carrier, temporarily waive or suspend any commission rule in chapter 2010-27 to 2010-29 inclusive. I'm not an attorney, but my non-attorney opinion says that the commission can, upon its own motion, waive its rules for good cause.
That's all I have, Mr. Smith. Thanks.
Other commissioner questions? Mr. Rislow.
The talk today is of cost, or at least some talk of Quest cost, where they may be of Midco's cost, and we have at least two cost studies.
Can you speak up a little bit? I lost you there. You talked today of cost, or at least some talk?
There's been some talk today of cost. Cost studies filed by Midco. I won't get into their completeness or staff's opinion, but we've been talking about cost. We've been talking about cost recovery. And the issue has been matching Quest rate, I believe, or at least having Midco match Quest rate. Why not just move everyone up? Instead of going to Quest, who is the largest and presumably the lowest cost, although I guess I don't know that, why not move everyone up so they're all the same at 11.5 or 12.25?
There are several arguments on why that shouldn't be done. The first of which is Rule ARSD 2010-27-6, which essentially states that no company can tariff a rate which recovers more than their cost. Now, why is that rule there, which I think gets into the essence of your question? Essentially, when you're talking rate making and monopoly services, allowing a company to over recover and charge more than their rate, and that's including a return on and a return of investment, you are, I want to choose my words carefully here, you are allowing a company to take advantage of monopoly power, because the customer does not have a choice and cannot go anywhere else to find the service at a cheaper rate, which more accurately reflects costs.
There have been numbers tossed out today. I've heard a number from Midco at 0.0985. That the Quest number, there's some discussion that their actual cost, Quest's actual cost, may be higher than the switched access rate they're charging. I guess my question is, well, we have companies that perhaps have different costs of switched access, and you're advocating equal rates. Where are the companies with higher costs supposed to make that up if they're going to compete and survive?
think the answer to that is probably twofold. If the companies entered into the market relying on a revenue stream that is inflated, whether it be intentionally or unintentionally, we have just created what I would term as a inefficient and ineconomic entry into the market. And the marketplace is going to weed those inefficient competitors out. In competition, we have winners and we have losers. And when we enter into a competitive market, that is exactly what's going to happen. What everyone's balancing today is moving from a competitive moving from a regulated market into a competitive market. How do we treat those, all those companies similarly, so we try and keep all of the competitors in, which in my mind is not allowing the market to work. And I think I varied off a little bit. I'm not sure if I answered your question. I actually kind of forgot what your question was. My apology, Greg.
No, that's fine. It might have been a lot out there in left field. I guess I want to make a comment and want you to respond. But as you know, I'm familiar with the issue. I'm familiar with the issue from staff's viewpoint. I'm familiar with the issue from Mikko's viewpoint. I can understand both of them. But as the commission sits and attempts to make a decision on this case, understanding the view of both parties, we have a cost study in front of us, a Mikko cost study that I guess there's at least been some input on staff's part into that cost study. We also have a rate, a LECA rate, or a settlement rate that's been thrown out. And we also have matching the quest rate. Now, my question is this. If Mikko has a cost study that at least has been commented on or commented upon by you to some extent, what in your mind needs to be done to this cost study that generated, I believe, a 0.0985 rate? What would need to be done? And I heard 3 months, and frankly, 3 months plus testimony plus data request, I guess I don't think it'll take only 3 months. I think it's going to take longer than that to condition that study, especially if, and I think I read Mikko's testimony that it could be used as a template for other companies. I think it would take considerably longer than that. But nonetheless, if you were going to condition that study from here on out, what steps would you take, or what confidence could the commission have in that study at this point, or what steps would you take to give the commission enough confidence to use that study in the future?
I think first and foremost, the commission should have very little confidence in that right now. Staff has very little confidence in that cost study right now. Certainly there would have to be numerous rounds of discovery filed. But before that, staff would have to sit down and review what we have, get supplemental information, determine if the assumptions that they're using are appropriate, determine whether the costs they're using are appropriate, whether they're unallowable costs, not to mention what and if they have any known and measurable adjustments, what they're doing on plant additions, how they're handling jurisdictional issues on removing and allocating. There would be a significant amount of work needed before that cost study could be adequately relied on by the commission. That would also include meeting many times with the company to see what they're doing. Certainly this is QSI's first cost study in South Dakota. I mean, one of the simple things that I'm probably fairly confident that they've included in costs are certain things that the commission has removed for years and years, and those are simple things like industry dues and association dues. I would be willing to bet that those are still in there. Granted, those are only a very small part of a cost study, but my belief, if Harlan and I were still on staff, and I only use us as an example because we are very familiar with cost studies and we've processed many of them in our time, we would probably need, if Midco was prompt in responding to data requests, we would probably take 5 to 7 rounds of data requests, and if they answer them promptly, I mean, we're talking, in my opinion, 8 months to a year, for the simple fact that this cost study is so different from what we've ever done before, in that getting from GAAP to the chart of accounts. And they talk about, they didn't use DEM weighting. What do we do about the SPIF? And they've removed non-jurisdictional items. All of that is issues that this cost study probably wasn't, this cost study model wasn't designed to address. So I guess in summary, it would take lots and lots of work and digging and discovery and learning and understanding.
It seems like it would help if the FCC would quickly give some direction on inter-carrier compensation, all the other issues that I guess Midco and the commission and staff and everyone else is trying to balance.
That's one of the main reasons why the existing rulemaking docket is sitting in there in limbo. I mean, everybody in this room has heard that argument. Well, should we or should we not act? But yes, that would provide much help if the FCC would act.
Other additional commissioner questions? Mr. Rizlov, do you have any other questions? I have a couple of questions, if I could, Keith.
Certainly.
I think they're pretty simple. Just to be absolutely clear on it now, when we generally think, and the, you know, electric rates and gas rates have been mentioned here today, in this particular case, the rates we're talking about here today are not at least necessarily payable by consumers. Is that correct?
They are not directly payable by consumers is the way I would word that.
Mm-hmm. And is it not true that at least the way the system tends to be set up today, without total uniformity of access rates, that a lot of times we can end up with the ironic result, maybe, that higher switched access rates for some companies can actually induce lower consumer rates?
Higher switched access rates can do what?
Induce lower, can make possible lower consumer rates.
Yes, I believe that's possible.
And that's kind of what we talk about if we think in terms of a concept like cross-subsidization.
Yes,
if you
want correct.
To call it that. Just throwing out, you know, you've kind of touched, and Commissioner Johnson, I think, was trying to get at this, where we have, absent the waiver provision, we have sort of this Hobson's choice, at least on the face of the rules, which is either an exemption where we default over to Rules 12 and 13, or we have cost study. In this case, Midco has now asked for a waiver. They've requested a waiver and proposed a third option, which is the use of that cost study that they've submitted, which admittedly hasn't been vetted anywhere near to the extent that you guys would normally vet a cost study. I mean, given the fact that you've recommended a CLEC rulemaking, etc., I mean, would a third alternative, in recognizing that their cost study may have some adjustments and it may end up having a little fat in there, it could end up having some fat, Is it an unreasonable thought to think for some of allowing their cost study to serve as a basis for a rate on an interim basis to let us get to that point where we can take a look at the system and get this thing maybe into a new way of dealing with it for all the companies? Is that at least a possible way for the commission? They're going to have to find some way out of this thing here.
I truly do understand the situation that the commission has on their table right now. In fact, staff has recognized those exact issues many times in memos that we have written. The concern that I have is if the commission allows the difference that we have is all the other CLECs that we are talking about here have moved rates downward. Granted, not as fast as everybody would like or as fast as the staff has pushed, but their rates are moving down. The opposite here is MIDCO is trying to increase rates in a time when everybody else is moving down. I fear for the outcome. What will occur if the commission allows MIDCO to increase those rates at the exact same time other companies are moving their rates down, and they're actually going to pass. Point blank, we have companies, CLECs, who have much higher costs, that have documented much higher costs, and in my belief have higher costs, that are going to be passing MIDCO if the commission, that are going to be going down while MIDCO is going up. They're going to flip-flop rates. I fear for the outcome of that scenario because it's going to be a nightmare.
Thank you. Commissioner, questions? Any additional question? Mr. Gerdes. Oh, wait a minute. No, I'm sorry. I'm backwards, Karen. I'm an old dog, you know. It takes me a little while here. Ms. Kramer, a redirect.
Thank you. Staff has no redirect.
Mr. Gerdes.
Just one question. Mr. Sanger, taking your last point, and you indicated that you're afraid that there'll be a rush on the commission by other CLECs wanting similar treatment. Would it not be fair to require them to do their own cost studies in the same manner, put them in the same boat, if that was a solution the commission wanted to look at?
I first want to comment on a statement that you made. I don't believe that the only problem is going to be a rush upon the commission resources. I don't believe that's the only fallout. But yes, they would have to file cost studies. If they want to increase their rates, they would have to file a cost study.
Okay, thank you.
I agree.
Any last follow-up from the commissioners? Mr. Singer, thank you. You're excused.
One administrative thing, I may have forgotten to mark my exhibit list, but were 11 and 12 received? Do you have them on your sheet as being received?
I do.
Okay.
We didn't have physical copies at the time, but you were going to provide those.
And, which we've done.
Okay. Yes, they were. They were offered in a minute. Ms. Kramer, you may call your next witness.
Thank you. Staff would just, Harlan Best is available, and I point out to you that he has 1 week left, so why staff isn't going to call him as a witness, if any of you would like to, just ask him about anything. I'm just kidding, but no, staff at rest.
Thank you. I'm assuming that do any commissioners, you don't have any questions of Harlan, do you? Or do you?
relevant to this proceeding?
Yes. I could say something relative to the event after work tonight, but I probably won't. We're having a retirement party for Harlan tonight. Mr. Gerdes, do you have a rebuttal case?
I don't believe so, but let me check. Just
okay.
30 seconds.
Sure.
Very briefly.
You speak into the mic then, Mr. Gerdes. Proceed.
Very briefly, Mr. Smith. One item that appears to have been an oversight in one of Mid-Continent's filings. I think Mr. Sanger indicated that he had a line count for Mid-Continent for 96,000 lines, something to that effect. And that is not accurate. And if I may, I'm calling Mr. Simmons to correct that, if I may.
Well, absolutely. That's clearly responsive to staff's direct case.
Mr. Simmons, what is the correct line count for South Dakota?
The correct line count for South Dakota is 47,154. I believe the number that Mr. Sanger quoted is the number representative of our total line counts for North Dakota, South Dakota, and Minnesota. So if there was an error in a report there, we need to check that and correct that. But the count in South Dakota, all locations, is 47,154.
That's all we have.
Okay. I think that, does staff intend to put on anything in response to that?
No, I would assume if that turns out to be the correct number, because it was in their 2007 annual report, that Mr. Gerdes will make sure the record is corrected to reflect it.
Yes, we intend to go back and follow up and correct that report.
And that's it for your case, Mr. Gerdes. Did I hear you right?
That's correct. Except we would appreciate the ability to
Well, I think that concludes the evidentiary portion of the hearing then today. Thank you all. Should we have a brief discussion now about commissioners, about what you want to do in terms of a post-hearing schedule? Or do you want to take that up at a later date in terms of a briefing schedule? In the briefing schedule? Well, a lot of times we just we talk it over now and we set it right on the record at these hearings. But it's up to you guys. We can also I can do it in a meeting next week. We can do a scheduling conference if you'd rather do it that way. If everybody's tired of it today.
Yeah. Whatever.
Otherwise, you know, whatever you guys want to do.
I was going to say if they want if the preference is to have briefs and oral argument, we just need to know that and then we can come up with a procedural schedule.
I'm not suggesting oral argument. I guess if you want to do it, I was just talking about briefing.
Just briefing, yeah, that's fine.
Should we do that then? Should I have a hold a pre or a post hearing conference? It'll have to be next week because I've got the rest of the week. I'm booked, but and just take care of it. Okay. Okay, we'll do that. Then I think we're adjourned. Unless someone has business, other business to bring up at this point. The hearing is adjourned.